Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And remember, to include the name The Scoreless Thriller Podcast in your application. Thank you.
Man there trying to stop Grover from getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was. Carlos Alberto.
Maradona just walked away from Hoddle then. Maldano. Open.
Dat we in de halve finale gaan komen met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp!
And welcome back to another episode of the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. I'm sorry it's been a while since we were last with you, but we're delighted to be back, aren't we, Leon?
We are. Mea culpa, mea culpa.
We're very happy to be, would you say, on the mic? Back on the mic?
Back
behind
on the mic.
The mic. Behind the mic. I feel like behind the mic sounds so much better.
Yeah, yeah, back in the studio.
Back in the studio, which doubles as my living room.
Fair enough. It's a good one. I love it.
Studio first, living room second.
I like it.
Okay, it's good. And we're pretty excited to have a special guest join us today. We've got a real Dane, Mr. Yannick Hansen. Yannick, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much. I'm feeling very Danish.
Are you feeling very patriotic and excited to talk about possibly the greatest day in your country's history?
Yes. I mean, yes. I would agree to everything you just said.
You were sounding a little unsure. You're like trying to think of a better day.
Yeah, I was thinking, was that really the best day?
Or was it back when Bluetooth united all the Danes?
Yeah. I guess
King
maybe.
King Canute.
I guess maybe when the Second World War was over was maybe equally up there. But yeah, apart from that, I think that's pretty much it.
A close second, maybe.
Close second.
Both wins over the Germans, I guess.
Okay. But
yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I was wondering who was going to say it, to be honest. So to introduce yourself, Yannick, and to establish some sort of football credentials, I asked you to prepare for two questions. The first one was, who was your favourite footballer when you were 10 years old and why?
It was Zico, a Brazilian football player. He was one of the best players, and especially during the 1982 World Cup.
Yeah, we enjoyed him.
We got to admire that one, his play during that World Cup.
He was amazing, and he was sort of the guy that when we were playing football during recess in school, he was the one that everybody wanted to be Zico.
Were you practicing any of the skill moves that he showed off during that time?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, we were just running in one big lump of kids with one ball in the middle and just running around kicking, except for a guy called Mess and a guy called Alan, who was in a class lower.
Okay.
And Alan ended up playing pro football for Brøndby and actually scored against Bayern Munich once.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, he was very good. He was very good.
Fame. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a pro for many years before I realized it was the guy from one year lower.
No, I'm just asking because I feel like nowadays every little child that gets to do a free kick like stands like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just to feel like it
a bit. But also you can like now, like kids can just watch YouTube videos of players for hours and hours, whereas for like back in Yannick's day, it was just like watching the World Cup every 4 years, and that was
exactly
the whole exposure
and
to him.
Even you got one football game a week on telly.
Yeah.
That was it. And except if they're during a time of the you know, the World Cup or European Championships, or when they were the European Cups. Then once in a while you got one more of those on top of the Saturday one from England.
Do you think that then it was like more mystique then, sort of like around a player like Zico, sort of a kind of
foreign-based
player that you don't ever see?
Exactly, we didn't know him that well, and back then he was playing in Brazilian football. Actually, I had to look up today if he actually played in Europe, but he did. He played in Udinese for a while, but otherwise he was playing in Flamengo in Brazil, so we didn't. I didn't see him. I only knew him from the World Cup.
Yeah.
I knew that he was a great player from that. And he was very hyped.
Yeah, good pick. I like it.
Good pick. Okay, and what was...
A close second would, of course, be Allan Simonsen, who was at the time one of the best European players, Danish guy. He played at Borussia Mönchengladbach for quite a while, and even at Barcelona. And I think, was it sometime early 80s, he was the player... European Player of the Year, something like that. I forget. It's at his Barca days, anyway. And, you know, when you got your school books, we borrowed them from the school, and then you had this wrapping paper that you put on it to save wear and tear on the books, and I had wrapping paper with the...
So everyone was jealous.
He played at Charlton as well at some point, actually, at his later...
He did what?
He played for Charlton Athletic. In his later.
Oh, so he came round.
Yeah. Vile guy.
And then what about for your favourite game?
My favourite game of all time.
It better not be this one.
Yeah, that would be really boring if you picked this one.
No, it's not.
You had time to prepare, so just for the listeners to know.
It was from, I think, 2003. And it was the last game of the season. And there were two... We were talking the... third division in England, and it was a matter whether it would be Swansea City or Exeter that would go down. There was 1 point in between them, so Swansea could do with a draw and Exeter had to win. And in the Swansea squad there was only one player whose contract wouldn't run out at the end of the game, so everything was really weird. And the club was close to being...
Going under
and things like that. And they won... they played against Hull. And they won 4-2 after trailing 2-1 at some point. And hat-trick by Thomas. I forget his first name. James Thomas.
Yeah.
Who was at Blackpool for a number of years.
Yeah.
And was born and raised in Swansea. Came back to Swansea to play for his home club to help save them from relegation. And I seem to remember he took like an 80% pay cut or something like that. Something like
just
that.
Just to play for his home team.
For his own home team. I don't know if he had many options. I don't know.
And
you have to go and look up the last goal. It's okay. Absolutely.
Were you at the game, or because you were living in Swansea at the time? Were you, or
no? I've never lived in Swansea.
Oh, okay. So what is your connection to Swansea again?
It's like, you know, every other Danish Swansea supporter, if there are any. When I was in school, we always watched the match of the day from England in Sportslørdag was the program.
Oh, Sportslørdag.
Yeah, fantastic program. So every Monday, those of us who follow football, we'd be talking about football. And
yeah. We'd
be talking about that one game that we saw. And then most of the other guys there, dad would be supporting a team, so they would support the same team. So that would be Aston Villa, Liverpool, Manchester United. And my dad watched football from time to time, but he never really supported the team. So they
so you had the liberty to pick whatever club.
Pretty much, they basically asked me to pick one. So we looked at the pools table, and then I don't know if it was the W or the fact that they're from Wales or something. They were just stood out a bit, so I chose them. And that year they were actually in the old Division 2, so the second best league. But they were doing really well, and that year they won promotion. So that's back in 80 or 81, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once you pick a team, you know, you stick with it.
Yeah.
So your fandom started on a high the first season. They actually got promoted.
Yeah, and then they were trailing in the lower leagues for many years after that. They were up for two seasons, I think, in the old first division.
So it got more painful.
Yeah. They had a few good years, like a decade ago, I guess, in the Premier League. And when they won the League Cup.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. After this game where they stayed up, it's only 8 years later that they actually made it to the Premier League. And actually there were two of the players on the books in that one game that also played in the Premier League. At least, was it just the one? At least Liam Britton.
Remember Liam Britton was like, there was something about that he played with them all the way up through the divisions.
In all four divisions, yeah. Yeah, he's a true legend. And they had Roberto Martinez, he was playing that game as well as a player. That the one where they survived and or stayed up, and then he later became player manager and took them up to the championship, I guess, before Brendan Rodgers took over.
So Martinez didn't take them to the Premier League? I'm not sure.
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
He did.
He left for Wigan at that stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think we had one. Did we have one, maybe two people before Brendan Rodgers? I forget, but it was Brendan Rodgers that took them up. Yeah.
Okay, quick interception, just because we talked about this like briefly. Under which circumstances do you think you could quit being a fan for a team?
Never. No. So this
depends.
I think so. I would like to think, like, morally, if something it happened similar to, you know, sort of happened, was possibly happening with Newcastle, like when they were being taken over basically by the Saudi regime.
Exactly, big investor comes in.
Like the city thing. I would probably have certain. The thing is, I don't know whether I would completely change who I support. I don't know whether I would be able to switch to another team.
When you say city, you mean Man City?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a good friend of mine, the guy I was talking to earlier today, he used to follow Man City. And he basically stopped when they became so super rich that it got ridiculous.
Yeah.
And for me, that's a fair point. Then it's not the club that he used to support.
Yeah, because they live
like
a different...
Husk, it's like an, yeah.
Yeah, they live a different idea of football then, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
And then the question is it still...
Yeah.
Are you still able to support this idea then?
Yeah, exactly. But
I wouldn't be able to switch to like another Premier League team or something.
No. Okay,
I
so it's...
Just choose like a local team.
Then rather just like... Rather than just like add on...
Yeah.
So you'll have like a side club which you then support, and maybe eventually this will become the main focus of your football attention.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, everyone has like clubs that other clubs in other leagues that they kind of will look out for. Like people in Ireland will maybe have a club from like the Irish League and also then from the Premier League. So it's quite common, I think, that like also in Denmark, right, people have
because I think it's interesting in that regard, as you already mentioned earlier, oftentimes you'll kind of inherit the club that you support, right? It's because of your grandma or your father or whoever supported that particular club. And then sometimes when you grow older, you might find out that like your politics or your idea of gameplay or whatever fits that much more better to a different club, then what do you do? I think it's like it is a very interesting question.
Yeah, that's what you told me also when I asked you if you were, because I knew you from Hamburg, if you were high star or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you sort of ended up on the wrong side in a way.
Yeah, this question is very personally motivated. I don't think we have the time to get into today. But
really sidetracked.
But there will be a podcast on it because I think like this is a very very interesting topic. We should cover it one day.
Some like themes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really good answers. You're off to a good solid start on your debut. He's played a few kind of like safe passes at the start, and now he's starting to express himself a bit more clearly.
I love it. Yeah.
My analogy. All right, let's move forward with the quiz. Okay. So, question one. Sorry for the pronunciation, Yannick, but what did Bran Bergen? Bran? Would you say Bran?
Bran.
Brun. Brun.
Yeah, I mean,
sounds like Brun the crime scene.
It's like Bran from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bran. The most annoying character in the show.
Brun.
But I mean, in Norway they don't do Bergen because everybody knows that Brun is from Bergen. So it's just like say Hertha Berlin. If you say Hertha in Germany, everybody knows them, right?
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. What did Brun do between 1979 and 1986? That puts them in football trivia's books? A, they allowed fans into the Brann Stadium for free for all home games. B, they achieved 6 successive promotions and then won the league title. C, they were relegated, then promoted, then relegated, then promoted, then relegated, then promoted, then relegated, then promoted. Or D, they had 29 different managers.
In 6 years, was it?
7 years.
7 years.
79 to 86.
And the question was that put them into the heart of the fans.
What did they do special in that time period?
Yeah.
I know there was a period when they did. They were sort of a, what do we in Danish would call a yo-yo team.
Yeah.
Is that a...
Yeah, that's what you say in English.
That's, yeah, we don't say that in Danish. We say elevator, you know, lift.
An elevator.
I love the metaphor though. A yo-yo team.
Yo-yo is a lot better than elevator.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Good. Okay, then we'll go with a.
But the thing is, there was also, you said that there was another one. What was the third one?
That was it. I don't want to read it out again.
No, that was it. That was the promotion and relegation. But the other one was with the managers, where they had like 20-something managers.
29 different managers.
That wasn't the one either. Then the first one was where they let in people for free. But what was
And then they got like promoted, and they actually won the league.
Yeah, 6 successive promotions and then won the league title.
Yeah, but there was one more, right?
No, it's 4.
There was 4. C was relegated and promoted, relegated
yeah,
and promoted.
Yeah, I got that.
B, 29
Yannick is not happy with the answers.
What was the B then?
6 successive promotions and then won the league title.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it was that. six consecutive, and this is, which period was this again?
79 and 86.
I don't think so. In my mind, they were in the top league most of the time during that period. So I can't see 6. Oh, I don't know.
I feel like you know a lot about this, so I'm kind of holding back. But also, you seem very indecisive.
Okay, I'm
gonna have to.
I have a good friend who is a fan supporter. He'll be disappointed, but I don't know. But okay. I don't think it's B.
We have a time.
I don't think it's B either. So it's C.
Yeah, let's go for C.
C.
Yeah.
C is the right answer.
Yes.
One from one. Question number 2. What is the nickname of the Greenland national side? A. The Snowy Owls. B. The Arctic Foxes, C. The Polar Teddy Bears, or D. The Penguins.
I mean, Yannick, this is tailored to
you. Yannick spent his summer in Greenland.
You have to know this. I mean, I'll keep quiet and let you make the decision.
I'm there in the national park. We're 500 kilometers from the nearest settlement.
I only hear excuses.
Actually, I don't know. I didn't know that they
Where is your Greenland national team merchandise?
I don't have one. I'm ashamed to say I don't have a Greenland shirt. I should have.
But okay, then pick.
I don't know, but I guess Snowy Owl is my best bet. But I don't know why it should be that.
Are you happy with Snowy Owls?
I'm happy with Snowy Owls. Yeah.
Snowy Owls is incorrect.
Damn.
The correct answer is C, the polar teddy bears.
The polar teddy bears.
One from two.
Where did you get this information? I never
from
heard
this.
From the internet.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
Question number three. When Swede Stefan Schwartz.
Stefan Schwartz.
I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
no, good. That's good.
Signed yeah, for Sunderland in 1999. There was a bizarre clause in his contract. What was it? A. He was forbidden from space travel. B. The training ground canteen would always have a fresh supply of Swedish meatballs. C. He would be allowed to leave the club for free if more than two Danes joined the club. Or D. He was always allowed Wednesday afternoons off from training in order to practice his ukulele.
Ah, that's... Yeah, it all sounds crazy, but... It's a Swede, so
it's gonna be the Danes.
That would be the most fun, wouldn't it?
It will be.
I'm hoping it's the Danes.
Okay, it has to be the Danes.
Let's try that.
Let's go for the Danes.
You are incorrect.
Ah,
the correct answer was A. He was forbidden from space travel.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Why? Do we have any background story to this one?
He expressed I think around the dawn of the Millennium,
yeah.
There was stuff that maybe commercial space travel would be coming shortly, and he'd expressed an interest in it. And the club was none of our players are going to space.
That is very careful. Was it tailored to him though?
Yeah,
was it
yeah, only it was, for him? I don't think it was in everyone's
because he expressed interest in this.
Yeah, I think he'd
particular endeavor.
And yeah,
that's
I like space.
Bonkers. But also love it.
It's fantastic.
Okay. Question number four. You're one from three, so you've got two more to bring it back. Ooh. The official mascot for the 1992 tournament was what animal? A. Bear. B. Dog. C. Bird. D. Rabbit.
Okay, I was born that year. Yannick, you watched it.
I think rabbit.
You watched it.
But also bird, that's very... That's not
no, but try to remember. It has to be somewhere stored in your memory.
92. I think it was a rabbit.
Clear the dust of the old memories.
Yeah.
Pull them out.
Yeah, there's these.
I've heard that it helps when you try to smell stuff and vividly remember songs and tunes of that.
Yeah.
So try to make it work, and then think of the mascot.
I think it was a rabbit.
It was a rabbit.
It's the only one that sort of rings a bell.
Rabbit is the correct answer.
Woohoo!
Okay.
Fantastic.
Yannick, I believe in us.
So, last question. This is for the win. Question number five.
The decisive one.
In 1986, whilst playing for West Ham, Alvin Martin achieved a remarkable feat. What was it? A. Scored three first half own goals. B. Got three yellow cards after the referee forgot to send him off after his second. C. Scored a hat-trick against three different goalkeepers. Or D. Scored three goals in 3 minutes.
I have no fucking clue. What was his name again?
Alvin Martin.
Alvin Martin. Doesn't ring a bell at all. I remember West Ham.
I feel like the silver lining in most of Alex's questions is that they're the most ridiculous ones that you could pick.
Well, there are several. I mean, three different goalies. That's pretty ridiculous. But the one with the three yellow cards. That sounds like something that he would pick up on.
Yeah,
so that happened at the 2010 World Cup with Graham Paul and the Australian guy. Croatia against Australia, where Simunic got three yellow cards.
Yeah.
All right.
So then that wouldn't be unique.
I mean,
so maybe three own goals. That's doable.
Yeah, that's also pretty weird.
That's also doable. Yannick, you decide. I mean, I feel like you're on the right track. You've got the lucky charm tonight.
What do you think?
I hope.
Okay, I'm leaning towards the goalkeepers.
So you do. Okay.
We'll try that. What do you think?
I can tell you that you are correct.
Woohoo!
Won the quiz.
Oh, it's
Yannick
been a while.
In,
Yannick.
Wins the quiz.
He sweeps in and just wins the quiz.
Yeah.
He works his magic.
I was confident throughout.
Yeah. I love it.
Do you want the backstory?
Yeah, I want backstory. Okay.
So the defender achieved this feat while playing for West Ham against Newcastle in 1986. His first goal came against Martin Thomas, who was the Newcastle actual goalkeeper, but who was forced off with injury. Martin then scored against defender Chris Hedworth, who got himself injured as well, which meant Peter Beardsley went in goal next, who we scored on as well. And the Hammers won 8-1.
Ah, quite a feat.
Ah, I'm so taken aback that you've won the quiz.
Yes, this is lovely. Do we have like the eternal score board for me and friends against you?
No, we should put it up on the wall. I feel like my flatmate Isla wouldn't really mind, you know, just a terrible, maybe write
just like draw it on the wall, like, yeah, directly.
I'll write it in a marker on the wall.
Yeah. We'll think about something.
Yeah, we'll think of something. We'll come up with something. All right.
Euro 1992, the fairy tale. That sounds cool.
That sounds good. I'm gonna keep that in. So when I started preparing for this podcast and doing some research, I found this this video with all the goals from Euro 1992.
Yeah.
With some sort of amazing sort of 90s synth music over it. And I came to the I made two notes while I watched this video. Do you want to hear my notes?
No, share them with us, please. Yes.
Thomas Brolin of Sweden had amazing hair. Mullets were cool.
Is this the same note?
Oh yes. Sorry, that's still part of it.
That's an add-on. Yeah.
Goalkeepers' jerseys were ridiculous.
Mm.
And the mustaches were great. Even the referees had mustaches.
Yeah.
Is that how you remember Euro 1992?
I have to take issue with one fact, one of your points. Mullets were frequent, but they were not cool. Mullets have never been cool. In Danish, we tend to call it Bundesliga hair. So, or Svenska hair.
Sounds cool to me.
why would you call it Bundesliga hair?
Because there was a lot of those in German football back then, yeah.
Yeah.
Fukuhila.
Mm. Exactly, the Fukuhila. We loved that shit.
Okay.
1992.
So, Euro 1992 is significant because it's also the last Euros where there's 8 teams in it. But I think like an 8-team tournament feels so small and like quite an achievement for a team to qualify from, for given it, because I think there was like 34 teams tried to qualify for this one, whereas now I think there's about 50 European teams. So it kind of comes this significant where sort of lots of more European teams enter with the breakup of sort of like the Soviet Union and also Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Which kind of marks the change also for, you know, the European tournament stuff. And then also we cannot forget another thing that kind of was my first exposure to this tournament was a few months back on Twitter. There was this quite viral 2-minute 20 clip of just Denmark shithousering their way to victory by exploiting the back pass rule. Do you remember this, Yannick?
Yeah, there was a lot. There was quite a lot of talk about it, and yeah, I mean there were a lot of back passes, and I mean, it's not a big surprise, really.
No, but it looks so wrong. Sorry that I have to intercept, but this really bugs me. When I watch this now, something in my brain just like screams, this is wrong.
Stop doing this.
Because I think also with football, it's kind of usually, because it's quite a simple game, rule makers are usually quite reluctant to like make major changes to the rules and stuff. Or make drastic things to change the rules of the game, but whereas you like watch the way like the simple change to the back pass rule just changed so much, and there's so much less like dead time with the back pass rule, and also like the ball in play and goalkeeper's roles sort of changing drastically as a result and what they had to do.
I was just saying it intuitively makes sense to have the back pass rule. It just looks weird when the goalie can pick it up at any time. And then just
but
waste.
You say intuitively, that's because minute. You grew up with it, right? I mean, for us, it was intuitively made sense that if you want to bring down the speed of the game, then you would do some back passing to the referee. It was or the goalie. And that was
isn't it very hard to play against it?
Yeah, there is a bit.
If you completely exploit this, then you can take so much time off the clock if you just keep doing this.
Absolutely, and that was just part of the game. Bang, that was just a fact of life, so to speak.
Fair enough.
And that's why they changed it. They wanted the game. I'm not sure about this, but I think actually it had to do with also trying to get America interested in the game. And one of the sort of stereotypical things that most Americans feel about football is that it's slow and it's boring, right? Mm-hmm. So they wanted to get some of the, at least that I seem to remember there was some talk about this back then. So you can look it up and cut out this.
Yeah, because it comes in like, I think they had it in the Summer Olympics of this year, but it comes in 1992, so literally like after this.
Yeah.
After this tournament.
Yeah, and then was it 94? I think was the World
Cup.
World Cup in
the US,
right?
Yeah.
So I think that was sort of even changing the size of goals. I remember was being discussed. It's a sport that the whole world is watching pretty much, right?
Yeah,
so you probably don't need to change much.
No. But I think also like there was after Italia 90 was quite well known for sort of like anti-football tactics and certain, you know, certain these kind of like time wasting and stuff.
Yeah.
So like even though there's like a lot of nostalgia and sort of among certain generation of people for like Italia 90 and stuff, like if you go back and watch the football, some of it is really hard to sit through. Plus now, like did it feel the same as when you would watch like a normal game now on TV and stuff, were you very conscious of like the differences and stuff?
Yeah, I can see the differences. I mean, there's the back pass rule, of course, but also the speed. You know, I mean the slower parts of the game back then was a bigger part of the match than it would be today. Mm. I would say
not necessarily.
You don't think so?
Because sometimes nowadays you'll have like strategic, very horizontal, vertical gameplay where they like just played up and down.
Yeah.
Like defender to defender to defender. And then it slows it down. And back in the days, I feel like they oftentimes made more use of the space and counter-intakes. So it felt like quite lively, I'd argue.
I think this match in particular was quite lively.
Yeah.
But when some of the other ones, the Denmark-France game, for instance, there's a lot of dead air.
I guess for me, like, the most important difference is the athleticism of players nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that they train every day with the best physios and whatever to be on peak performance.
Yeah.
And you can tell that back then that was not the case.
Yeah, I think you see it mostly when they don't have the ball, right? When you watch the top teams and the way they press, like when they lose the ball.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
They're able to like keep up this high tempo up until like the end of the game. Whereas, you know, when we've watched some of the older games and stuff, you do notice how different the game looks from the first minute to like the 70th minute. Whereas now it kind of, there's less of a kind of difference because there's so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
More able to sustain themselves over the game.
And also, there was more beer and cigarettes involved in their lives.
Denmark initially did not qualify for the tournament. They finished second in their group to Yugoslavia. But Yugoslavia were first forced to pull out. I think it's a week. Is it a week or 2 weeks before the tournament? How do you recollect it?
I think, wasn't it two?
Because I read one thing where it was like 12 days and then another thing said maybe like 10 or something. So I'm not sure when Denmark got the green light that they were to.
It's probably something like that, yeah.
Hop over the border.
Yeah. But the crazy thing was the team, the Yugoslavian team, they were there. They were in Sweden. The whole team was there. They were ready to play, basically. They were there to do like in a training camp.
Yeah.
Looking back, that's the one thing where I feel that maybe that's a part that I'm less proud of this whole thing, is I thought these players were not the ones killing other people in Yugoslavia at the time. So on behalf of those players, I feel they were really...
And your argument is that the tournament, at least at the beginning, was a little bit tainted by the eruption of the civil war and what has been
and Yugoslavia both before that and during that time was a great nation of footballing nation.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was in many ways a pity not to have them there. They had great players and it would have been from a sort of neutral footballer, footballing fans' point of view, it was a shame that they weren't there.
Yeah,
they were good to see, good to watch.
Yeah, but so the Danes stepped in.
The Danes stepped in, but they were missing Michael Laudrup, which is
yeah. There was, I mean, there was this whole
because Michael and Brian Laudrup and also Jan Mulby had fallen out with the coach during the qualifying, but Mulby and Brian came back for the tournament. But do you remember why they were?
Well, first time you mentioned this to me with Mulby, I didn't remember that. So I didn't remember that he was part of this.
Insignificant compared to the Laudrups, I guess.
Well, I mean, he was a Swansea City manager.
Oh,
I don't remember that he was part of it. But the Laudrup brothers, they definitely were. And I think they didn't like the style of football that Richard Møller Nielsen was.
Was a sort of hoofball.
It was fairly sort
industrial.
Of
industrial.
Give me one more.
I don't know. It was very
agricultural. Agricultural is my favorite.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. It doesn't make any sense. like describing opposite things, but still, no, but you'll get the same vibe when it comes to football. It's just insane.
Rural, I would call it.
No, that's too sophisticated a term.
No, it wouldn't use rural.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Agriculturalist.
No,
way.
But it was fairly simple football, right?
Yannick,
but
would you describe your own style of football as agricultural?
or industrial.
Or industrial. If you had to pick, which one of these would it be?
See, industrial, that sounds that's too efficient for
me. Yeah, that's right. Agricultural. Failing farmer.
Very self-critical.
And so the speed of grain grow.
I feel like agricultural sounds more laborious. You'll just run all the time, make it work.
Yeah.
Now, sorry, we were talking about.
We're so good at digressions.
Brian Laudrup played. Michael Laudrup did not play, and he didn't like the football.
And initially they both pulled out, and apparently Mulby as well. But they didn't like his style of football, I guess. And I don't think they had respect for him really. Mm-hmm. And he had a particular style, I would say, as well. And maybe sort of socially, he was maybe a little bit awkward, or he had a special way of saying things.
Yeah, I watched a short documentary, and it's kind of hard. It's to be, you don't want to be too unfair on someone speaking, obviously, in their second language, but he doesn't come across as this sort of most charismatic, I don't get the impression through it that he had this brilliant tactical plan which led Denmark to victory, or is that being too unkind?
Yeah, I don't know. I think actually he probably was quite good tactically, but he was definitely not master of what's that called, when he wasn't a big speaker.
Not a Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, no. And he wasn't charismatic like that. He said, there are some incredible quotes from him, but sometimes it was not necessarily, it wasn't necessarily meant to be funny, but sometimes it was.
What are your favorite of his quotes?
I think it's one of his, where he sort of translated a Danish expression word for word, and said to the press that they should screw down their expectations. That was fantastic.
I don't know why, but I'm reminded of Van Gaal when he was Manchester United manager, and he wanted to describe his team that they were hungry for goals or something, but he said they were horny for goals.
It works.
It doesn't.
You know what he means.
Makes more sense than screwing down expectations, I guess.
Screw your expectations to the floor. So, Denmark begin this tournament with a suitably dour 0-0 draw with England. Do you remember this game? This was in Malmo, the first game of the tournament, and a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, I remember watching that. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, part of the story is also that, you know, that the most of these players came back from holiday. The Danish players came back from holiday, and even when they're gathering the team and going to Sweden to warm up before the game, there were some quite a few of the players were playing in the Danish league.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted
They were playing at the time. There were games featured.
So the league was still going on.
Yeah, and of course they tried to have that postponed, but the league. Basically the league, sort of the association of the league clubs, they didn't want to move those games.
I love when people look incredibly small-minded in history, just like...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the only thing I can draw on for the background to this is from this movie that was made of it, which I have no idea how much is dramatized. Dramatized, that's the one. But apparently the coach at the time, the national coach at the time, and the head of the league association, he didn't like the coach.
Well, they had a fallout.
Yeah, and there was some
this old coach is falling out with everyone.
They didn't rate him. I think that was the thing, and he just thought he was rubbish and didn't want to help him. And originally they had hired a German guy, Horst Wohlert or something like that, and then it turned out that he had actually signed for a club in Germany. He couldn't be released, so they couldn't sign him anyway, and it was a big mess. And that's when Rikard Møller Nielsen came in, and now I forgot why I went to that point,
because you were talking about Denmark 0 England.
Oh yeah, that's right. So because some of those players hadn't even been part of the training camp for more than a few days, we screwed down our expectations.
Okay, fair enough.
So
yeah,
we had no expectation. We basically thought that, you know, we're going to be trampled by any team because they're out of shape. But at the same time,
but that's what Jensen said, right? There was no pressure on the team.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
But he did say in the documentary that I watched that when he gathered the players together, he said, "We're going to Sweden to win the tournament."
Yeah.
But also one thing I want to ask you about as well is that when I looked at like the squad list, there's like almost maybe 2/3 or more of the squad are playing in Denmark at the time.
Yeah.
So I guess was the Danish league probably a bit stronger back then than it would be
now? Well, maybe the Brøndby was definitely.
Yeah, a lot of them.
A lot of them were playing for Brøndby, right?
Yeah.
And that was quite a big advantage also.
Yeah, and they were good back then. I mean, they were probably a better team in European terms than any of the teams we have right now, I would say.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would be Copenhagen and Midtjylland supporters who would disagree, but they're wrong.
They don't listen to
And you regularly fight them on YouTube in the comment section.
But either way, I think also most of the Danish players were... If you look at the substitute bench... They were almost all the ones playing in the Danish clubs.
Okay.
So most of the foreign players...
So the few foreign players were like the stars.
Yeah, I would say so. But it's not that few. I mean, there was quite a few playing in Germany. So all the sort of big names, they were playing abroad. And then we played Sweden and lost.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fucking Brolin who scored, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was actually... From memory, at least, it was fairly close game.
That's what in the documentary I watched. Like the Schmeichel said, he'd never been in a more disappointed Danish dressing room afterwards because he felt like they dominated the game and that they still lost.
And that's the memory I have of the game as well. That it was unlucky, but that also meant that we thought that that's it. You know, we're not gonna
make it
if we can't beat the Swedes. Who? What can we do?
You can't. There's no chance of beating the French.
And then we were going to play France, and there were even some in the Danish media. I think even the commentators after the game said something that even if we beat France, we're out of the tournament.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They must have been really bad at maths or something. we weren't. But apparently, according to, I think I saw the same documentary. Holdet, or what the hell is that? Like sort of assistant coachy type person. He told the players, actually, we're not out yet. You know, if we beat France, and if I can't remember, was it Sweden?
Sweden beats England.
Yeah. Then we would still go through, you know. So it wasn't over, but it was going to be difficult, but it wasn't over. And the French at the time had some incredible players, right?
But they very much under. So one of the things I read was Sivabek.
Sivabek. Yeah. Sivabek.
He was playing in Monaco at the time, so some of the French players obviously knew him. And before the game, they told him, "Don't tackle us too hard because we've got to prepare for the semi-final."
Oh yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Cocky.
Yeah, very cocky. And they had an incredible player size. And they'd
won every single qualifying game, so they were.
And they had Pepin.
Yeah.
And he was one of these guys that just scored all the time at the time. You know, he was an incredible goal scorer. And anyway, they had an amazing team.
Mm.
And so.
But you won. Once you won.
Yeah, and it seemed almost impossible, but we actually started off relatively decently. And got the first goal. Things seemed pretty good. And then Pepin, of course, scored.
Yeah.
And then at least in my house, we all sat back and thought, okay, that's it. We're out. But then he took off Brian Laudrup and substituted him with Lars Elstrup, who at that time was playing in the Danish league. And we knew he could score goals, but we just said, you know, take out Brian Laudrup, the only really big star on the Danish team.
Yeah.
It seemed mad. And then, of course, Elstrup scored 2-1, became a legend for that goal, and we ended up going to the semi-final.
And then in the semi-final, you played the brilliant sort of Dutch team that everyone was convinced before the tournament was going to...
Yeah, they were
one of the
top favorites.
They'd win,
Yeah, but I mean, it was a team of world stars, right? I mean, they had all the big names back then. They were... Yeah, I mean... Rijkaard and
Hullit, Van Basten,
Wouters.
In the highlights that I watched, it was, you know, Schmeichel just pulling off save after save.
Yeah.
It was
like that in several games, but in the semi-final and in the final, there are some really crucial points of the game where he pulls out some.
Yeah, he was pulling his weight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. But so then in the end. So you managed, it was a 2-2 draw, and then you won on penalties and were in the final.
Yeah.
And I mean, at this point, did you think that, like, did people think that Denmark stood a chance in the final against Germany, or they were just kind of so happy just to get this far that they were...
Over the moon of getting that far. It was beyond anyone's dreams, really.
But then again, I mean, after you win against the Netherlands, right, everything seems possible
at
that point.
Absolutely.
You beat in the Dutch.
That, but one of the things was also there were so many injuries in... Injuries and near injuries in the team that even in the press they knew about this, so they knew that most of the team were really struggling at the end of the Dutch game, right? So the medical team had a huge task on their hands to get them ready for the German game, and they knew that some of them were only just ready to start. So we just and then the German team at the time, and also just, you know, German teams in general over the...
Yeah, I mean, they were defending world champions, right?
Exactly, they were a fantastic team.
This was also the first tournament they competed in as a unified...
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yes. Oh, yeah, we were talking about that earlier, right, with Sammer.
Yeah.
Being East German, yeah. But
so you also had them, which I read that Kim Vilfort missed the game in France because he had to go back to Denmark because his daughter was suffering from leukemia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he went because she was on the mend at the time when he left, but then she had sort of a, I don't know what the word is in English. She sort of, her condition deteriorated again, and then he had to go back for that game, and then it stabilized, and then he came back. What's that? Sort of rumor says that his daughter actually asked him to go back because she wanted to see him on telly or something like that. Mm. You know? So he was missing that one game, but he came back for the final. Which was good, I guess.
Yeah, and this was the backstory then to Denmark's greatest moment in football history, right?
Absolutely.
The final.
Can I just say one last thing about the semi-final? In an interview after the game, Van Breukelen, the incredibly arrogant Dutch goalkeeper.
Oh, the goalkeeper. Oh.
Yeah, Van Breukelen.
Yeah.
Who even my Dutch friends also tell me that everybody sees him as being really arrogant, even to this day. But he said to some reporter afterwards that it was a pity for football that Denmark went through, because everybody knew the only ones who could beat the Germans were the Dutch.
Mm.
Which just made the whole thing even sweeter at the end, right?
Yeah. That, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't even know who's going to win.
Who is in the final?
Who is in the final? Who's going to win this one?
So anyway, we go to the final, and it's Denmark against Germany. So Germany had beaten Sweden, the hosts, in the semifinals.
And then, the match started. And I feel like there was a lot of pressure coming on from the Germans at the beginning, right?
I think Jensen
says that were the hardest 20 minutes of football we have ever faced. The Germans were all over the pitch and we couldn't get into our play.
Yeah.
So this is describing the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's what it looked like as well.
Yeah. Do you remember how you're feeling?
If we didn't have any expectations at the beginning of the tournament, we certainly have no expectations against the Germans, especially the way that they came out in the first half.
Yeah,
you know. So after about 10 minutes, we were already resigned to the fact that this is it. You know.
Okay.
At least I had.
We've had our fun.
And you know, we were just talking about how long can they hold on and things like that. You know, so.
Yeah. There is a big chance, I think, at the start. I think Reuter goes 1-on-1. That's what I have in my notes. So and that's the first big Schmeichel save. And then in the 18th minute, Denmark take the lead with the goal, which is kind of contentious. Well, you thought it was kind of contentious, right, with the foul and the corner flag.
Well, I know that was something that was being discussed, and I've looked at it many times. And to be honest, I don't really know. It's definitely a
crunching tackle.
Absolutely crunching.
By Kim Vilbort.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the question is if, you know, was it on the ball or was it on the bloke? And I can't see from, I've seen it so many times.
Hard to tell with this one. I'm fine with this one. I'll discuss. I'll have some contentions on the next one. But this one, I'll give to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, it was quite quite nice.
Yeah. So then after the tackle, Poulsen. So Fleming picks up the ball and then he puts it inside to Jonny Jensen, who scores a brilliant shot.
Absolutely.
And this is his second goal in 48 matches, right?
Yeah, something like
that.
So
he picked a good time.
Yeah.
To score.
And he attempted a lot. Also early in that game and also in other games, and he was just so far from
goal. I read
it was embarrassing.
So the football gods were with you that day.
Yeah.
I read a story that I think Arsenal signed him after this summer, and lots of Arsenal fans were very excited because they seen him score this goal in the Euros, and they thought, oh, they've got this brilliant like goal scoring midfielder. And I think he scored once in like 99 games for Arsenal as well.
Right. Yeah, you used to be able to buy this t-shirt that said I was there when Jensen scored for Arsenal, so, or for the Gunners.
I mean, at least he played 99 games, you know, that's quite an achievement.
He's doing something right.
Yeah.
It wasn't goal scoring, but also with this goal there's the story that the Danish coach during one of the training sessions before the final actually took him to one side and asked him to look at the laces of his shoes when he was going for one of these shots, and that's why he kept shooting left, right and center, was because he didn't focus on his laces.
What was he focusing on?
I don't know, but he told him look at the laces when you're shooting.
Okay.
On his boots, and then he claims that that's what he did, and then he scored the goal.
I'll do that the next time.
Yeah. Focus when on I that play tomorrow.
Yeah. Look at my laces. We'll tell you next week how
it
went.
I have also in my notes that this line from the commentator who says "Go til Waflinger."
Yeah, go til Waflinger.
What does that mean?
You know, Waffler is waffles.
So go til
Waflinger. It's just a straight. It just means, you know, get stuck in. But I don't know.
Can you like literally? Can you translate it word by word?
And then it's go to the waffles.
Go to the waffles. Like yeah. When someone scores, you'll just say go to the waffles.
No.
It's like
it's
crunching tackle. Get in.
Yes. Okay. Come on, get stuck in. Yeah. You know? It's more like get stuck in.
Get stuck in the waffles.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Go to waffle. Yeah, it's a great term.
Yeah, so, and then after the goal, Germany have, most of the possession for the rest of the first half, but there's not too much more action in the rest of the first half.
Nothing much happens, no. Germany had their fair share of chances before the 18th minute, but then, yeah, it kind of ebbs out a bit. They've got possession, but nothing comes off it. And so, yeah, we go into the second half with a score 1-0 for Denmark.
And then in the second half it's kind of more of the same, and then in my notes I have that there's a really good chance for Klinsmann. He has a brilliant, I think it's a header, and then Schmeichel tips it over the bar. Making quite
brilliant save from Schmeichel, that one,
making quite a few good saves. But I mean, I don't think Denmark are under too much pressure. Like, I think you can see that Germany are kind of at a higher standard, better quality, maybe higher, but they're not creating loads and loads of chances.
No, they know how to play the ball around, and that's about it. But they're not, they're not forcing like the equaliser.
How do you remember it? Were you comfortable? 1-0 lead, easy.
Not at all.
Cracking just open the cold ones.
We just, of course. It was summer. but we were expecting them to get a goal.
To equalise.
We just thought it's a matter of time when they'll equalise. And they had a couple of close calls. There was the Klinsmann one. I think was it Riedle or someone had the one where he's all the way down in the corner saving it, Schmeichel.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I forget. So there were a couple of close calls. So now we didn't feel particularly confident that it was in the bag.
But then Kim Vilfort came.
Yep.
Do you want to describe what he did, especially like with zooming in on his arms? What happened there?
Yeah, I forget.
The 78th minute.
I forget who makes the pass. Who makes the pass to him?
Christensen wins the header on the halfway line, and then Vilfort
bounces off to Vilfort.
Oh, right, okay.
And then he kind of tries to control it, and I would argue that you can see very clearly that the ball jumps to his hand. And then he just continues to play.
Yeah, and that's the contended bit.
Okay. But the finish is so nice.
Let's not get ahead of it. I agree, but also it shouldn't have been eligible.
So he's basically running like between two
legitimate,
between two German players,
between his 2 feet, and then bam, in the corner.
It bounces against his hand. He just continues to play. Everyone else somehow miraculously ends up like in shooting distance from the goal, and then he goes ahead and.
Yeah,
it's a nice shot.
It's a very nice shot. Yeah. So the question is, was there a handball or not?
And you would honestly contend this?
I think it was.
I don't think it's very clear, but I don't think that it's fair to say that it was definitely not a handball. But I don't
it is fair to say that it was definitely not a handball.
Yeah, I can't say it was definitely not a handball.
Okay.
But I can't say.
So if I say it was definitely a handball. Then my certainty outweighs your vague statement.
On your head be it. Now, I don't think it's very clear, but it could have been a handball. Yeah, actually, my mate earlier today told me that definitely do not say that. Just say that it was never a handball.
Oh, okay. I'm glad that you got briefed by your mate before this.
Don't let the Germans know.
Yeah,
I mean, I had this Wembley goal discussion already on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is kind of it's way less important to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Still, I think it was a handball though.
Which one would you rather had?
Obviously, the Wembley goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like for being counted for Germany.
Yeah,
so definitely.
In that game,
because it's also like in Germany, like no one ever talks about this handball in the Euro final 1992. Yeah. But Wembley goal, that's a thing.
Yeah,
like everyone will. If you tell anyone like about Wembley, then they'll immediately associate it with this particular 66. Goal.
66. Yeah, I know.
But as it was, Denmark play it out, and they're pretty, yeah, like pretty comfortable then for the last.
Yeah, from that point on, yeah, that's that. Yeah.
So what was it? What was it like being in the country for the few weeks after that? Was like, I mean, no, imagine nobody working, pubs running dry.
I mean, how did you celebrate? Did you go out?
Yeah, you must have gone out. That was,
I mean imagine, like, I remember when Germany won this, like, there was a huge party just in front of my door, and then we all went to the Reeper Barn, and crowds everywhere. Everyone's
like,
so excited.
I think Ireland stopped for a week when Ireland got to the World Cup quarterfinals, so I can't imagine what it would have been.
Well, it would have been like,
especially.
I mean, as the underdogs. Yannick, take us away.
Yes. To 1992. As the two of you very well know, I did fuck all that evening. Now, the thing is that obviously in where I grew up, things were so calm that everybody was celebrating in their own house,
in the Danish way.
So me and
was it very hygge?
Very hygge. Yeah. So me and my mate, we decided let's go and see if things are. There was like a shopping, little sort of shopping center in town. Let's see if things are kicking off. You know. So we were going up there, and there was just no one there.
Yeah.
And that, but the train station is there. So we were discussing, should we go to Copenhagen?
Yeah.
And celebrate there. So we sort of find the coins we have, and we could see that we just don't have enough to get two tickets, so we decided not to, and we were trying to call mates in the neighborhood if they were home.
How far was Copenhagen away?
It's like 30 minutes on the train.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course we should have just gone. Nobody were checking tickets for that whole week, I guess, or at least not that day, so we should have gone.
Also, that would have been the best reason to get busted for not having a ticket.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week, Yannick. It has been
You're
a
very
lot of
welcome.
Fun going down memory lane with you, and also
I think you'll have to do quite a lot of editing with all the sidetracks.
No, yeah, maybe, but also it was nice.
Yeah,
it was good to explore it this way. Yeah. It felt very intuitive. Like we'd go wherever the discussion would take us. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Sounds
so
good.
Thanks again for joining us. I hope we'll have you again another time.
Sure.
Thanks again for joining us on the podcast, Neil.
I'm delighted to be here, as always.
And a reminder, if you have enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe on social media, either on Facebook or on Twitter, or else subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you want to recommend the podcast to a friend, that would be great too. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Podcast Network.